not strictly a Bhagavatam class, but we'll get to Bhagavatam. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, first of all, thank you all very much for inviting me to be here. Maharaj, thank you. It's really nice to be Gitanagari again. It's been a lot of time here over the years. It's like a second home in a way. So, the topic is the Tva in Guru Tattva. And I'm going to start with this topic. You know, we by the way, tattva generally is translated as principle, but the tva and tat is simply that. You know, tat just means that, tva, ness, thatness. So that's about as abstract as you can get, huh? Thatness. And generally means a principle. So this idea of Tva is something that adds this quality to being abstract. And Prabhupada, very interestingly, in the beginning of this Vyasa Puja homage that he delivered to his spiritual master in Bombay, in 1936, it was published in the Harmonist in the March issue of 1936. Bhaktisiddhanta appreciated very much. There was a poem that that he wrote, and then there was the address that he delivered at the Bombay Gaudiya Math, where he was almost like the temple president. He was a householder, he lived outside, he wasn't really somebody who lived in a mat, but he was taking care of it. So in February he delivered this, and then Bhaktisiddhanta appreciated it, so it was printed in their magazine. And I've gone back, and sometimes it's been reprinted in a couple of ISKCON publications, but they've always edited it and changed it around and fixed it up. So I went back and fixed it back to the original. And he starts, and it's titled Sri Vyas Puj Homage. And then the Sanskrit is all in Devanagari. It's not transliterated. And it starts with this quotation, Shakshat daritvena samasta shastaya uttastata bhavyata eva sadhi kintu prabhu ya priya eva tasya vande guru shi charanara vindam. Translated, we can translate. It's not translated at all. It's just given like that. None of these Sanskrit quotations are translated. But in the revealed scriptures, it is declared that the spiritual master should be worshipped like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and this injunction is obeyed by pure devotees of the Lord. The spiritual master is the most confidential servant of the Lord. Thus let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of our spiritual master. By the way, there's another twa in this one. Shakshad haritvena. That's in the instrumental case. So the word is actually shakshad haritva. I've seen people quote this and says, yes, it says the spiritual master is shakshad hari, which is really wrong. He's not directly hari, but he's directly haritva. He directly has hariness, you might say. but that's the Sakshat Hari Here it's translated worship like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's not exactly really what it says either. Better way to say it, he is as good as Hari. So here is the address. I'm just reading the first part of it. Gentlemen, on behalf of the members of the Bombay branch of the Gaudiya Mutt, let me welcome you all, because you have so kindly joined us tonight in our congregational offerings of homage to the lotus feet of the world teacher Acharya Dev, who is the founder of this Gaudiya mission and the president Acharya of Sri Sri Vishwa Vaishnava Raj Sabha. I mean, my eternal divine master, Paramahamsa Paribrajakacharya Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. 62 years ago, on this auspicious day, the Acharya Dev made his appearance by the call of Thakur Bhaktivinod at Sri Kshetra Jagannath Dham at Puri. Gentlemen, the offering of such an homage, as has been arranged this evening, to the Acharya Dev. Notice all the time, the Acharya Dev, like that, with a capital A, is not a sectarian concern, for when we speak of the fundamental principle of Guru Dev, or Acharya Dev, Guru Dev is in capital letters, everywhere Guru shows up, it's capitalized here. So here he's talking about the fundamental principle of Guru Dev or Acharya Dev. We speak of something that is of universal application. So you hear this, have this twa idea here, the universal principle, like a tattva, pancha tattva. They're not just individuals, but they are cosmic principles at the same time. And that's very interesting for us, because when we talk about, when we say the word "ness," we mean an abstraction. You know, the word "abstract" means to take out. And there's this particular flower, but it's a plant. Say, as soon as I give it the name of the kind of plant it is a rose. Still, this rose plant is different from all the other rose plants, so there's this idea of what a rose is, so you're abstracting already from the particulars of this particular rose plant. And then, so a rose bush, a rose is a class name, and then you can say vegetation, in general, that's even more abstract, and then living beings is more abstract, you know, you get to these less and less concrete. But here, what we should know about Krishna consciousness is this division between the concrete and the abstract is also a duality. We say panchatattva, but they're individual persons. They're not abstract entities at all. They have names. They have... when we say God, you know, when Thomas Aquinas, the famous Christian medieval theologian, says in his Summa Theologica, the more abstract words are, the more properly they refer to God. And people say, yeah, God is a person, but not like the persons that we knew, but something like a person. And really, you know, when you start talking about God, all the words break down, and finally you just zip your lips and say nothing. It's like that. The more abstract the words are, the more proper. And not only do we say God is a person, but we know that he plays a flute. He doesn't play a trombone. He doesn't, you know, we have really down to the concrete. He's a cowherd. He doesn't hurt goats. He doesn't hurt sheep. I mean, all these things, we, as Prabhupada said, we know his name, we know his address, we know his relatives. Now, here's the absolute, and he's got relatives. What kind of absolute has relatives? I mean, he's related. So
we see this,
kind of overcoming of duality is also there when it comes to the spiritual master. That's what we want to see. So he's talking about the principle. But it's not really impersonal either. Highly personal. He said it's not sectarian. When we speak of the fundamental principle of Guru Dev or Acharya Dev, we speak of something that is of universal application. There does not arise any question of discriminating my guru from that of yours or anyone else's. There is only one guru who appears in an infinity of forms to teach you, me, and all others. So this is one very important aspect. The guru, or Acharya Dev, as we learn from the bona fide scriptures, delivers the message of the absolute world, I mean the transcendental abode of the absolute personality, where everything none differently serves the absolute truth. We have heard so many times that Mahajno Yena Gata Sapanta, this is in Devanagari in the original, but we have hardly tried to understand the real purport of this shloka. In this shloka, of course, is in the interesting reply that Yudhisthira gives. What is the pantha? The yaksha showed up to ask him a bunch of riddles. One of them, what is the pantha? And here this Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta. That is the pantha, is that way in which the Mahajanas have gone. So here he's using this Mahajana to refer to this Acharya Dev. And that's a very interesting quotation here that Prabhupada makes, because first of all, what is not the path? Particle Pratishta. Shutayo Vibhina. None of these are the path. Because argument has no foundation. It can't find it through argument because parko apratishta. It is without a foundation. If I give you a logical argument, it's a deductive argument. We only get it to induction. It's a deductive argument. Deductive argument means if the premises are true, the conclusion is true. Absolutely sure and certain. But all that tells you is the price you have to pay to deny the conclusion. Here's the typical example of a deductive argument. All men are mortal. Socrates is a man, therefore Socrates is mortal. Right? That's a deductive argument. Solid. You know, the rules of logic apply. I don't like it. Say I'm Socrates and I don't like the conclusion that I'm mortal. What do I say? Well, how do you know all men are mortal? Have you seen them all? Maybe I'm different. Or, how do you know I'm a man? You just deny what it is. So Tarka Pratishta. It's true. And so philosophers, you know, they give a deductive argument, and then they've got premises, then they have to give arguments in favor of those premises, and that has premises, and, you know, it goes on and on and on. So Apratishta, Tarka Pratishta. Shruteo Vadina. You're going to quote scripture to me? They're different divisions. You give me, you have one quote, I give you my quotes. You know? There's a Karmakanda, there's a Gyanakanda, there's a Upasanakanda. They're all different divisions of scripture. So forget Shruteo, forget the scriptures. Tarako Patishta, Shruteo Vadina. Nasav Yat, yeah, how does that go? Nasav yatir matir tam vadinam. And what's the meaning? And, oh yeah, if you're a rishi, if you're a sage, you can't be a muni unless you disagree with all the others. That's your qualification. An academic circle, if you simply agree with somebody else, that's the end of your career. You have to be original. You know? Truth is one, but everybody has to be original. Yeah. So you can't go to the rishis. You can't be considered a rishi unless you have a separate opinion. Then he says, dharmasya tattvam vinitaya guhayam. The prince of dharma is hidden. It's guham. It's hidden in the heart. Hidden in the heart. And therefore, those people who have it in their heart, they are the mahajanas who you should follow. That's what he says. So notice the word, it's secret. It's gujam. It's not easy to get to, but it's exemplified or followed by the mahajanas. So one should follow the mahajanas. And so Prabhupada says, we have hardly tried to understand the real purport of the shloka, and if we scrutinizingly study this proposition, we can understand that the Mahajana is one. And the royal road to the transcendental world is also one. They're not like the rishis who have their different opinions. Then he quotes he says the Katha Upanishad, I think most places I've heard referred to in the Mundaka Upanishad, but tad vijanartam sagurum ivadigat chit samat pani shrotriyam brahmanishtam, that to know that truth, one must approach the guru, tad vijnana. Vijnana means realize knowledge, experience knowledge, not just theoretical jnana, but vijnana. You should approach this guru, samit pani, with firewood in your hand. Samit is the wood for sacrifice that you go out and collect. So like a menial servant, that's the idea. And this the spiritual master, Kshatriyam, learned in the transcendental science and the Shrutis, and Brahmanishtam, fixed in the absolute truth. Thus it has been enjoined herewith that in order to receive that transcendental knowledge, one must approach the Guru. Therefore, if the absolute truth, Brahmanishta, the absolute truth is one, about which we think there is no difference of opinion, the guru cannot be two. The acharya, to whom we have assembled tonight to offer our humble homage, is not the guru of a sectarian institution, or one out of many differing exponents of the truth. On the contrary, he is the Jagat Guru, or the Guru of all of us. The only difference is that some obey him wholeheartedly, while others do not obey him directly. And then he quotes from the Bhagavatam, Acharyamam Vijaniyam Navam Nayeta Karhichit Namarcha Bhujasu Yeta Sarvadeva Mayo Guru. Krishna speaking this to Uddhava, Acharyam Mam. Acharya is me. He's me, or you can say in another form. And he should not be disrespected or thought of as a marcha, an ordinary mortal human being, nor should one be asuyeta, envious, because the guru is sarvadeva maya. Really, literally means made up of all the devas. Usually translated representative of all the devas, but Sarvadeva Maya. So Prabhupada commenting Acharya Mam Vijaniyam, that is, the Acharya has been identified with God Himself. All the gods. He has nothing to do with the affairs of this mundane world. He does not descend here to meddle with the affairs of temporary necessities. Not a politician. Whatever. But to deliver the fallen and conditioned souls, the souls or entities who have come here to the material world with a mode of enjoyment by the mind and the five organs of sense perception. He appears before us to reveal the light of the Vedas and to bestow upon us the blessings of full-fledged freedom, after which we should hanker at every step of our life's journey. So this is how Prabhupada introduces this idea of the spiritual master who is one and who is present in many different forms. So this is the idea of tattva, guru tattva. And there's an agreement. And that's, when you say represent, it means to present all over again. To present again. So you have to present something to make that something visible or available. So you represent the previous Acharya, who, if that person has represented the previous Acharya, it's the same teaching. There's no deviation. If they represent God, then it also. It is Krishna presented in an accessible way. That's the abstract side. The concrete side is this accessible. And here's where you have this kind of another medieval theologian in Europe, Nicholas of Cusa, defined God as the coincidence of opposites. Again, that's pretty abstract, but it's getting a little closer to just abstract. So that means if God is the coincidence of opposites, the concreteness, specificity has to be there. And that also has to be there in God's representatives. So now I want to turn to Bhagavatam. First canto, third chapter. Krishna is the source of all incarnations. And there's a famous verse that a number of us have written about and commented on. I think Ramapada Swami once mentioned this in a Vyasa Puja homage, where the verse goes, I'll just read the English. O learned Brahmanas, when Shukadev Goswami recited Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Purkit, this is Sutta speaking, to the sages at Naimisharanya Forest, who are curious to know what happened. So I was there when Shukadev recited the Bhagavatam there in the presence of Emperor Purkit. I heard him with rapt attention. Nivishta. And thus by his mercy I learned the Bhagavatam from that great and powerful sage. Now I shall try to make you hear the very same thing as I have learned it from him and as I have realized it. He uses this word yata adi yata aditam yata mati yata aditam, as it was presented, and yathamati, as I have realized it. There are these two sides are there. So then Prabhupada talks about what it means. Now there's a purport here. that we've commented on. The purport to the next verse, which is the first verse of the next chapter, continues this purport. And that's what's very interesting, what's in there. So here in this purport, Prabhupada starts by saying, one can certainly see directly the presence of Lord Sri Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam if one has heard it from a self-realized great soul like Sukadeva Goswami. Now notice, he's talking about this yatam, as I have realized it. Realized knowledge means experience knowledge. And he says, see directly the presence of Lord Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam. That's what he's saying. That's what we're talking about when we say realize knowledge. Because the same principle applies to Bhagavatam that applies to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Krishna and Krishna's name are the same. And that if I can hear Krishna's name, say Krishna's name, with full realization, then I see Krishna directly. And the Bhagavatam is just a big name of Krishna, many volumes long. Because we know we can take a name Krishna, and that's a short name, but there's a long name, Yamuna Tiruvanachari. That's a name of Krishna. There could be a Yamuna Tiruvanachari Das somewhere. It's a long compound. And to translate a Sanskrit compound, you start from the right and go to the left. Yamuna Tiruvanachari. He wanders on the banks. Yamuna Tiruvana, banks of the Yamuna, the forest of the banks of the Yamuna. One who is accustomed to wandering on the forest of the banks of the Yamuna. That's Krishna's name. And Sanat Goswami has written Krishna Lila Stava, where he's turned the whole of the Vrindavan pastimes into names of Krishna in the same way, using these compounds. So that he does it. He actually takes the whole Bhagavatam and pretty much makes nothing but names of Krishna. So then Prabhupada goes on that you have to hear from a self-realized great soul like Sukadeva Goswami, and Prabhupada then talks about how you can't learn it from the artistic hired reciters who do the Bhagavata Sapta, who are not self-realized souls, but good storytellers, good narrators. I've seen them, actually. I've been there when they've got the whole audience in tears. And the guy goes out and smokes a cigarette. Like that. You know, these things happen. They're just good. They're talented, that's all. And nor can you, he says, from people who interpret the text by mundane scholarship. I know lots of professors who know the Bhagavatam better than we do, as far as knowing the text, studied it, and I don't believe a word of it. He says, one has to learn Bhagavatam from the representatives of Sukadeva Goswami and no one else if one at all wants to see Lord Krishna in the pages. So again, we're back to that topic. That is the process. And then Prabhupada goes through how they've heard. Sutta heard it from Sukadeva. Sukadeva heard it from Vyas and so on. He mentions the cyclic succession. He says, simple hearing is not enough. What is the non-simple hearing? One must realize the text with proper attention. So here we come to the part of the key, is this idea of attention, paying attention. The modern world is the world of distraction. It's gotten worse lately with devices, you know. Distracted driving is a real hazard. But the famous English poet T.S. Eliot in the 20s writing about the modern world, said, distracted from distraction by distraction. It's like we're all distracted. That doesn't mean people cannot focus, cannot pay attention. And we are not trained to do that. But it says here, he realized the text with proper attention. The word nivishta means that Suta Goswami drank the juice of Bhagavatam with his ears. It's like that intent, like a super thirsty person, you know, really eager. That is the real process of receiving Bhagavatam. One should hear with rapt attention from the real person. So the real person has to be there. That's the person who has heard with rapt attention from a previous real person. And he can at once realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. The secret, here's the word again, guhyam, the secret of knowing Bhagavatam is mentioned here. No one can give rapt attention who is not pure in mind. Oh, there's something to pay a being or pay you. The mind, oh, that noise-making machinery in our head that's like always going off in a dozen different directions, huh? Oh, the mind has to, you have to be pure in mind. What is that? How can we be pure in mind? Oh, he says here, no one can be pure in mind who is not pure in action. Oh, if our mind has to be pure, then our behavior has to be pure. No one can be pure in action who is not pure in eating, sleeping, hearing, and mating. That is to say, even the most basic animal activities of life have to be done in a pure way. Then you can start to pay attention. So the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness should not be just compartmentalized as moral rules. They are the rules of knowledge. If you want to have knowledge, these are the principles for knowledge. Tell anybody in a university that these days, who are all trying to find out, at least on our higher levels in different departments, you know, the ultimate principles of everything. If you want to know them, you have to do this. But somehow or another, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Krishna in the pages of Bhagavatam. So here Prabhupada is showing what a guru does. Not just present the topic, but train people to become hearers. That's the other part of it. We have to be trained, and therefore that has to enter into relationships. Now, in the next text, 141, goes all the way back. Srila Vyasadeva said, here's Vyas again. So obviously he must have come in again later, and this is the idea that he again added stuff on after he first spoke it to Shukadev. He's adding something more. But that's what it says, Vyasa Uvacha. On hearing Sutta speak thus, Shonaka Muni, who is the elderly, learned leader of all the rishis engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami by addressing him as follows. And then what he says. So it mentions that Shonaka Rishi was qualified to give those congratulations. And he said, he congratulated Sri Suta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Sukadeva Goswami and realized it personally. So now Prabhupada's commenting on the last verse, really, this where he says, yataditam yata mati, as he had heard it exactly and as he had realized it. So here this part is a commentary on the previous verse, really, continuing. Prabhupada sometimes does like that. He overflows. So now he wants to talk about personal realization. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, pride, attempt to show one's learning by trying to surpass the previous acharyas. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya. And at the same time, he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for a particular circumstance in a suitable manner. So two things, completely faithful, but then in the circumstances be able to be completely faithful and yet intelligible to the audience. That means you're absolute and relative. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya, and at the same time he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. Here it's in italics. In Prabhupada's original, this is one of the original Bhagavatams he printed in India. It was in boldface. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it. You're trying to figure out something that nobody ever knew, huh? Yet, it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. That realize you're able to do this. Somehow you hear it, you understand it exactly, you digest it, you absorb it, it becomes part of you, and when it comes out again, it may be expressed in a different way, with a certain inflection, with a certain individuality. Just as, in fact, Srila Prabhupada is speaking here to us. If you read the writings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he never talks like the way Prabhupada. It's really a completely different voice. And here we have Prabhupada's voice. This is called realization. The leader of the assembly, Shomaka, could estimate the value of the speaker, Sri Sutta Goswami, simply by his uttering yataditam yata mati. And therefore he was very glad to congratulate him in ecstasy. No learned man should be willing to hear a person who does not represent the original acharya. So the speaker and the audience were bona fide in this meeting where Bhagavatam was recited for the second time. That should be the standard of recitation of Bhagavatam so that its real purpose can be served and Lord Krishna can be realized without difficulty. Unless this situation is created, Bhagavatam recitation will be for ulterior purposes, and such recitation is useless labor both for the speaker and for the audience. So here's what Prabhupada did. Not only did he come as a realized speaker, he had to create bona fide, qualified hearers. That's why we have the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to make those people, hopefully us, who are qualified hearers of Bhagavatam. And then, if we become qualified hearers, we can in turn become qualified speakers. So that's why this institution is different from any other educational institution, because it is understood, as Prabhupada mentions about Bhagavad Gita, it is not for the amusement or the entertainment of armchair speculators, it is for the formation of character. And this formation of character, this following these principles of Krishna consciousness, are not simply something in the realm of morality or correct action. They're there for the realm of true knowledge, real knowledge. So that's what an acharya does. This is the mercy of the acharya for suffering humanity. So Prabhupada came here, and out of what people would have thought unpromising material, because when he came to America, like the rest of the Gaudiya Mat, they understood when they were sending their missions to Europe that they realized they had something that was the highest product of an advanced culture. Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Very, very elevated. And so they were thinking that the people that would be the reception, proper reception, would be also the educated elite. And that's what they're looking for. If you see the book, I had in my hands the original copy, one of the original copies of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. This was the book that the Gaudiya Mat had prepared for their three preachers to take to London in 1933. And it was, first of all, written by Nishikant Sanyal, who was a professor of history. Very, very high level English, not easy, and aimed, pitched at a very high audience. That was the expectation, and you can see the introduction of Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. Yeah, this is what he was expecting also. It'll be at least taken up by the leading people. Who showed up was not those leading people. And I know right away that most of his god brothers would have like looked around for somebody else, and Prabhupada didn't. So that was his effort. So the idea here of this guru tattva, the essence of guruness, also contains within it not just an abstraction, but the ability to realize and relate and give it to others so that it could be understood. This realized knowledge is there. And that realized knowledge really means that one has to have experience. And in this way, by following these principles that are pure in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, these are what are required. And then you have this very interesting idea that you don't change anything. As Prabhupada said, I haven't changed anything. I've simply repeated. But then you read Bhaktisiddhanta, and it's quite different. And you go back to other previous acharyas. They're all individuals, distinct characters, really. But still, the message is the same. And that's what it means when it's alive. It has a living force in it, and it is faithful, and at the same time absolute and relative. Relative means in a relationship. We believe in relationships. Krishna's name has, his own names are names of his relatives. That's personalism. So this is what's there. I think maybe we'll stop there. I don't know how late we're supposed to go. Do we have time for some? Okay. Any questions, comments? Yes, Mataji.
From the proportion readings, he is quoted Prabhupada saying that one should not be envious of the spiritual master.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean, envious of the spiritual master?
One should really want to become the servant of the spiritual master. There are people, there have been people in our movement that didn't want to remain the servant. They wanted to be the master. Prabhupada was asked once, some gentleman from India was praising him for having done a miracle. And Prabhupada said, no, I've not created anything miraculous. He said, one thing is to my credit. I have always remained the servant. I have never tried to become the master. So, but people, when you look at a great person, sometimes, when you envy somebody, that means they have something that's admirable. If they didn't have something that was enviable, you wouldn't envy them. But they've got some really great thing. Now what's the difference? Just like look at the Mayavadis. They appreciate Krishna. They appreciate his wealth, his strength, his beauty, his knowledge. They appreciate his godhood. So they do. Mayavadis, you can read pages and pages of glorification of God in Mayavadis who are actually... What makes them envious of God? Because they want to become God themselves. Let me be God. That's envy. Yeah, you have all those great qualities. The only problem is you have them and not me. I want them for myself. Stab, take over. So envy is also, there's appreciation. So when one appreciates the previous acharya, yes, I'm glad. Just like we should say, yes, Krishna, I'm glad that you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I just want to become your servant. And I say to my spiritual, I'm glad you're my guru, I just want to become your servant. So the temptation when there's some great person is to envy that person. And as you know, in mundane affairs, in business, in universities, in hospitals or whatever, people are trying to, knock the guy out who's in charge and take his place. They're always doing this. That's what makes it material. One of the things that makes material life quite miserable is these people wanting to become, everybody has their little God project, which involves a lot of times envy and wanting to... And if you can't really get rid of the person, then you can certainly talk bad about them to everybody. You can do whatever. That's it. Okay? All right. Anyway, question coming?
Guru, I'm trying to understand when Prabhupada addresses or in his address to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he says, you know, the universe of Guru. And he's speaking obviously, as you explained so nicely, the principle. For the disciple to relate to that universal principle, but also, you know, it's a very personal relationship. So, also, it may sometimes think we see that maybe that happened in our you know, ISKCON community through the history, that when you start to look throughout, you know, especially saying the Gaudiya Math, there is also, you know, Prabhupada, God's brother is presenting also in some way about this. It's supposed to be presenting the same teachings and representing the same teachings and being also part of that same principle of the universal Guru. But yet Prabhupada also warned that do not, you know, so that type of thing. So it is there, but also one has to, that conflict sometimes.
I'm not sure which conflict you're talking about now, but that
You know, we're just kind of as a people that are also teaching Bhaktisiddhanta's teaching and Krishna and Buddhism. So, you know,
I see.
Fences make good neighbors.
The interesting thing, Prabhupada saw the collapse of the Gaudiya Math. When I was doing research for this book on the position of Srila Prabhupada, I ended up reading a great deal of The Harmonist. And one of the effects of reading The Harmonist was I got a sense of what the Gaudiya Math was like when it was healthy. Extraordinary. I mean, in a very short time, it expanded from a very few temples to all over India. And even Burma, there were a few outside of India. And that wasn't at all their aim to spread all over India. Their real focus, their crowning glory was to go to the West. Just going all over India was the stepping stone. And they did this huge drive to do it. The order to preach in English that Prabhupada got from Bhaktisiddhanta was actually given to so many of his leaders. He wasn't singled out for this. It was just Bhaktisiddhanta's idea, and when he first met Prabhupada, he saw that he was studying in an English language college, and you should do this. It was his very first instruction, and then again his last letter that he got from him told him the same thing. So he wasn't the only one at all. But it didn't happen. It just didn't happen. The Gaudiya Math fell apart. Basically, the seeds were there. The competition between the Sri Chaitanya Math in Mayapur, which was the parent Math of all the others, and the big Gaudiya Math in Calcutta, the big marble temple, and they began to compete for each other because people wanted, let me become the next Acharya, let me become greater, let me, so they were competing for this position. And they could not cooperate because of that. And so it fell apart. And because of that, Prabhupada himself, the record shows, was always trying to cooperate with them. When he first got to New York, he wrote back and said to Tirtha Maharaj of the Chaitanya Math in Mayapur, If you just help me, I'll be a worker of the Chaitanya Mahārāja. I'll be one of the servants. Because all they needed was some help to get money released from India. He had a donor to buy a temple in New York, a very wealthy man, but there were currency restrictions. You know, Prabhupada could only take 40 rupees out. The Gaudiya Math, number of the sannyasis, they were very well connected with the Indian government. They'd only have to take a little trouble to go and spend a day or two and get the money released. Nobody did it. Not only did they did not want to help, they actively wanted him not to succeed. But he kept trying, you know. He made the Bhaktivedanta Charity Trust at the end to help out, to work together. He never stopped trying. But there was something that was higher to these people than the principle of serving the spiritual master. And that was their own position. And there were some seeds of envy. Let me be in charge now. And they split over that. And the idea of doing the really hard thing, forming a governing body, which Ramapada Swami and I just know how tough that is so much. But that forces you to cooperate with you to work together. So that was the problem. Otherwise, Prabhupada says they're preaching in their own way. They're making devotees. They're representing the philosophy, but not to the point where they could cooperate. And it seems like the essence of working together is having compassion for fallen souls. That's exemplified by Bhaktisiddhanta, and that idea, because Prabhupada translated for us once in a lecture, and Bhaktisiddhanta says, I can't remember if it's appearance day or disappearance day. He said, on this auspicious day, I shall give you the same order my spiritual master gave me. It's transferred. I'll give you the same order. Parampara, he said. He said, now to some extent you have understood this Krishna consciousness, which wasn't very much. It was a very early day. Now, he said, you should have some feeling for suffering humanity. Now, that's what it amounts to. The idea of going to the West or preaching Krishna consciousness is to have some feeling for suffering humanity. Obviously, Bhaktisiddhanta, by making an organization, he understood it's a force multiplier. Five of us can go out and preach, and working alone, we can do the work of five people. If somehow we get together and organize, from five people will become the work of 15 or 20 people. That's what organization is, a full force multiplier. And that's what Bhaktisiddhanta wanted. That kind of organization of cooperating together. And they could not realize it, right, because of personal ambition and that something higher than just being the servant of the spiritual master. So that's why one has to kind of be a little careful. And when Prabhupada sent the disciples to India to stay with the God brothers, they had very bad experiences with him. First of all, he's not qualified, he's not both, you know. Prabhupada was not very important, they said. Because he was a householder, as Prabhupada said, a rotten householder. He was not a big deal in the Gaudiya Math as far as everybody was concerned. And so here the dark horse comes up, you know, you're at the race and toward the finish line, the horse comes running up from the rear and wins, you know. Everybody is like, whoa, did that happen? That's what they had to deal with. Okay? Anything else? All right. Yeah? Thank you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.